So back to resist not evil. Even in small things, one can observe the same law. Very often, the greatest trouble that one has in life is not because of the difficulties others make, but because of one's own lack of comprehension of human nature. If one knew human nature, one would realize that the first and the last lesson to learn is not to resist evil. For resistance becomes fuel to the fire. If you say to someone, "Do not do that," if we ask someone, "Why did you do it?" if we reproach someone saying, "You have done such and such a thing," in all these ways, we only make the evil stronger. We only fix him firmer in his fault. Of course, they want to argue, right? And defend themselves. It's the nature of things. Another thing, I've seen Marcia Tadaya do this. I saw Karunamani do this. And you could see the most strange people come before them. And they treat them, you know, they totally say things, oh, you're a great teacher, you're such a great being. And they just may be the most disrespectful, you know, creepy person in the world, but, you know, they try to turn them around because they know that telling them you're a creepy person isn't going to help them. Peer Vilayat had a way of doing that, too. He often would bring the people that were really the most peculiar in the community closest to him and have them work side by side with him. It would change the way they viewed themselves. Continuing with this same teaching on not resisting evil, life is a place where it is necessary to move gently, whether it be in thought, speech, or action. The rhythm must be controlled. The law of harmony must be observed in all that one does. Again, this balance. Balance. Remember, the watchword is balance. The ways of wisdom and tenderness cannot be made into a restrictive principle for people to follow. A brush can never take the place of a knife. And therefore, we all have to use every method and activity according to the circumstances. Nevertheless, the thought of resisting evil should always be in the background. The problem of evil is great. Many cannot bear even to hear it mentioned, although they are faced with it every moment of their lives. And to leave this problem unsolved does not help. It's paradoxical. Mm-hmm. Resist it, but don't leave it unresolved. Everyone's ready to judge, to observe, or to take notice of the evil in another, not realizing that sometimes the surface of the thing is quite different from its depth. Perhaps that which seems evil has something good underneath, or what appears good may contain a spark of evil. And by what standard can we determine evil and good? And who can judge the evil and good of anyone else? If one can judge at all, it is one's own evil and good. The difficulty is that everyone demands more of another person in the way of thought and consideration. Right? Of kindness and love than he does of himself. He wants more justice and fairness on the part of another than he himself is prepared to give. And his standard may be so high that another person cannot keep to it, which in turn makes him disappointed. What generally happens is that one does not just remain quiet after being disappointed, but one resists, and so the struggle of life continues. Right. We know this. This is familiar to all of us. Any thoughts or questions about that?
I was just kind of thinking, it's almost like a paradox for me, even, because within resisting the evil isn't evil itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's really the resistance of the evil is really having to deal with one's own nature and that side of one's own nature, because that's what's it's just, I can't even articulate it, but I'm kind of feeling it and seeing it.
I have had a couple of friends who are very good at articulating it. One person would always say to me, and they would say it in their different ways, because one was an empath and one person was more Jungian psychology oriented in their studies. But the one that was more had more empathic qualities would always say, we wouldn't see it if it wasn't inside of us. Mm-hmm. There's something in us that resonates with it, and that's why we know it. Right? So it's interesting, and maybe it's a little bit like what you're saying, Karima. Yeah. It's paradoxical because we see it externally, but how could we see it and recognize it if we didn't feel it also within us? It didn't reside somewhere in us. And in that way, those people that are providing that mirror are a great blessing. As much as we don't like to think of it, they're showing us something. And you know, it's like it's like this little shock. You know, we're stimulated. Then all of a sudden we may notice it's just gone. Maybe then that means that we've learned something or we've transformed something in ourselves. You understand? Very important to observe. My other friend, who was more oriented towards, and some of you know her, Patty Cato Abiga, she would teach Jungian psychology when she was here teaching at the Art Institute, and she'd always say in her upper state New York accent, "Ow, that just means they're shadowing you," meaning that again, it's something hidden within you. And that could be also the jealousy, you see. Sometimes we come across someone and we think, Why are they being lifted up, or why are they so great? But in truth, it may be that we ourselves don't feel that empowerment to be that way. So we resent it in another person, you see? We have that, we draw that line of limitation within our own self.
And the shadows within us are the things that are hard for us to look at, but we see it in someone else and we go, oh,
so well, I know. But I tell you, the very things you don't like in another person, they're there. Whether they're externalized or hidden within us, they're all there because we're all part of the same stuff. We're all part of nature. We're all part of human nature.
Others' faults are your own shortcomings.
That's true. That's right.
Amina, do you have a microphone? Would you like to speak your comment?
Amina, can you speak to us? Do you have a microphone, or do you want Cabrilla to read something?
We wait a minute, hold on. I'm sorry, Amina, hold on one second. Can you repeat yourself?
Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can.
Okay. My comment is non-resistance isn't necessarily passive. And that shows up in martial arts. We can see it the best. If somebody is swinging a fist in your direction, if you step out of the way, you're being non-resistant. And they can't hit you. And the swing of your arm burns itself out like the fire.
Yes, that's
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And let me see if I can get this quote right, because I love this quote. This is by Mahatma Gandhi, which of course we know led the great movement of, kind of passive resistance. And he said, first they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win.
Yeah, right.
You get it?
Yeah.
If you maintain. And it's true, that happens. First they laugh at you, then they get scared, then they want to fight you. It's still if you don't give it energy, or you go with that flow in some ways, or find those sensitive points, then you win. Any other? Yes, Latif.
It seems like the principle is the same whether or not the motivation is evil or good, like in Gandhi's cases. You know, good motivation behind it, and then, you know, that resistance. I don't know.
It's true.
I mean.
And we also know that, you know, they often say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Sometimes that can also do great harm. Can I tell you, I have another little teaching here that I'd like to read, because this is from Mershabit. The story may be familiar. It's from the Cosmic Language, and it's the story of Moses and Kidder. Can I read it? Because it relates to this. Are there any other comments before I proceed?
Actually, Ananda, do you have a microphone? Would you like to speak what you had typed in?
Ananda, are you there? Do you want to?
Oh, she asked if I could be her voice for
okay,
this time.
Okay, sure.
And it's a quote from M. Wilson. We are born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not in just some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
Thank you. Very beautiful. Thank you. Was there someone else?
It was
coming back. Yeah. It does require a kind of an agility and mindfulness in the moment. Another example, and you all may have examples, and please feel free to share them, but I remember, you know, in India, I mean, India's kind of known for its corruption, but it's more overt than it is in other places, you know. And I remember sometimes encountering police officers or immigration officials who would want to try to get money. And instead of acting shocked or giving in, I would just laugh and I'd say, now what? You're a public official, but you're acting like a beggar. Are you kidding me? You need 5 rupees that bad? They would start to laugh and it would totally disarm them. So sometimes just sort of calling it too kind of helps and makes that human connection as well. You know, and you want the passport? Great. What are you going to do with it? You know, just give it back to me. You can't use it. It's not your picture. You know what I mean? Whatever. Give me $100. What are you going to do with $100?
Especially with humor.
humor really helps so much. Yeah. You know, it can really help. It saved me many a time. But again, this teaching is, I love this teaching because this is like, when we think that things should be one way, maybe it's not, things aren't exactly as they appear, and that's what Ibn Arabi says, you know, seek to know that which transpires behind that which appears. So here's the story. And this is from Hazrat Anay Khan, Cosmic Language on Reason. There's a story about Moses who was passing with Kidder through a country. Kidder was the murshid of Moses when Moses was being prepared for prophetship. Moses' first lesson of discipline was to keep quiet under all conditions. Very hard. We talked about that during last class, but sometimes... And that's also cultural, that in some cultures, if you're of a lesser position or younger, you won't speak to an elder or someone that's considered in a higher position unless you're spoken to first. In the Tibetan culture, for example, if you're offered to share tea or food with someone that's a teacher or in a revered position, you know, us, immediately, we think, oh, we're just going to gobble up stuff. No, you always wait until they take something, take their tea or take their food before you take it. It's also something good to practice here, if we're mindful of it, to not start gobbling before everybody else is ready to start eating with us. So Moses' first lesson of discipline was to keep quiet under all conditions. While they were walking through the beauty of nature, both teacher and pupil were quiet. The teacher was exalted in seeing the beauty of nature, and the pupil also felt it. So they arrived on the bank of a river, where Moses saw a little child drowning, and the mother crying aloud, for she could not help. Here Moses could not keep his lips closed. He had to break the discipline and say, "Master, save him! The child is drowning." Kidder said, "Quiet!" And Moses was quiet. But the heart of Moses was restless, and he did not know what to think. Can the master be so thoughtless, so inconsiderate, so cruel? Or is the master powerless? He could not understand which was which. He did not dare to think such a thought, and yet it made him feel very uncomfortable. As they went further, they saw a boat sinking, and Moses said, "Master, that boat is sinking. It's going down." And the master again ordered him to be quiet. So then Moses was quiet. But he was still more uncomfortable. When they arrived home, he said, "Master, I thought you would have saved that little innocent child from drowning, and that you would have saved the boat which was going down in the water, but you did nothing. I cannot understand, but I should like to have an explanation." The master said, "What you saw, I also saw. We both saw. So there's no use in your telling me, because I saw. You did not need to tell me what was happening, for I knew. If I had thought it was better to interfere, I could have done it. Why did you take the trouble to tell me and spoil your vow of silence?" The master continued, "The child who was drowning was meant to bring about a conflict between two nations, And thousands of lives were going to be destroyed in that conflict. When he was drowned, this averted the other danger. The other danger which was to come. Moses looked at him with great surprise. Then Kidder said, "The boat that was sinking was a boat of pirates. It was sailing in order to wreck a large ship full of pilgrims and then to take what was left in the ship and bring it home. Do you think that you and I can be a judge of it? The judge is behind. He knows what he is doing. He knows his work. When you are told to be quiet, your work is to keep your lips closed and to see everything, as I am doing silently in reverence. There is a Persian verse which says, it is the gardener who knows which plant to rear and which to cut down. It is the gardener who knows which plant to rear and which to cut down. And we ourselves are sometimes being nurtured and reared, and in some ways we're also being pruned. You might ask me, shall we all take the same attitude? If a person is troubled or in difficulty, shall we not go and help? Yes, you may help. But at the same time, if a spiritual person does not seem to do what you expect him to do, you do not need to be troubled about it. For you must know that there is some reason. You do not need to judge him, for the more you evolve, the more your reason becomes different. So no one has the power to judge another, but one may do his best oneself. Question. This is someone asking Murshid a question. Is that why the great ones have been misjudged? Because the little ones tried to judge them? Answer. This has always been the great difficulty in the lives of the evolved souls. What happened with Jesus Christ? In the one place, there was an earthly reason. In the other place, there was heavenly reason. In the one place, there was earthly reason. In another place, there was heavenly reason. I shall tell you a story of my insolence that will interest you. So Murshid's going to tell a story on himself. Once I looked at my Murshid, and there came to my restless mind a thought. Why should such a great soul, such as my Murshid, wear embroidered gold slippers? I checked myself at once. It was only a thought. It could never escape my lips. It was under control, but there it was known. I could not cover my insolence with my lips. My heart was open before my Murshid as an open book. He instantly saw it and read my thought. And do you know what answer he gave me? He said, "The treasures of the world are at my feet." Murshid had a great humor. People often think he was very serious, but he had a great humor and a great wit. So here's a little saying from the Vedan, which is wonderful. I don't think I'd ever really read this before, but this has to do with the idea, resist not evil. And just think of this. If dogs bark at the elephant, it does not take notice and goes on its way. If dogs bark at the elephant, it takes no notice and goes on its way. So do the wise when attacked by the ignorant. So do the wise when attacked by the ignorant. I mean, what are you going to say?
Nothing, just look at him.
Just turn away and go on.
That's for sure.
Mersha also, there was another wonderful quote by Mersha where he said, if you throw a fool a flower, he will throw back at you a rock. Mm-hmm. He knew. Mm-hmm. You know? He knew. If dogs bark at an elephant, and if you've ever seen those elephants, I mean, they just are there. They're just sort of, they can be quite, you know, quite a terror in and of themselves. But I mean, let's face it, here are these dogs, and all it has to do is sit on them or take their foot and crush them, right? You know, or take them in their, you know. You know, in their trunk. But if dogs bark at the elephant, it takes no notice and goes on its way. So do the wise when attacked by the ignorant. You just dig the trenches deeper. You know, and it's that principle of resist not evil. Any comments from afar or in the room as well? It's hard to do because we want to answer back. We want to say something. We want to correct people. We want to justify ourselves. We want to defend ourselves.
I think after a while you get satisfaction just looking there. Yeah.
And it fuels the fire.
And that's
go ahead.
That's why it overlaps too with the whole series of teachings about judging another person. Like he who has not sinned or made a mistake,
that's
throw the first stone.
That's right.
You know.
This is on a very mundane level, but last week at school, a little second grader that I work with, he really didn't want to do something that was required, and it was actually a fun project. It was Christmas presents for parents, but he just, you know, was very resistant to working on it. And anyway, he finally ended up with, he was so mad at me saying, you're expected to do this. And he said, I am not coming to school tomorrow. And I said nothing. I gave no reaction, whatever. I walked him out the door at the end of the day to his sisters, as I always do. And the next day, he held my chair for me to sit down.
Yeah.
It changed.
Yeah. So you acted dignified, and he returned that.
Yeah.
Instead of fighting with him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Carlos, would you like to share something?
Manauer. If you want to say something, Manauer, you can unmute or you can type it.
Just read the text.
Okay.
He said, they are Indian elephants. They are full of tolerance.
That's very true. That's very true.
And Alima, would you like to go ahead? Oh, we hear you typing.
We can hear you typing. You can say it to us.
Would you like to go ahead and say it, or would you like me to say it?
Alima, go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead. We hear you. Oh, are you muted now? Okay. She had asked me to read it. In the beginning of the teaching on Resist Not Evil, Miriam mentioned accommodation of life. In what connection was that said?
Oh, that was in the first Gatha reading, and it said, let me just repeat that. The egoistic has no capacity, for it is his ego which makes the heart, so to speak, solid, so hardened, we could say, giving no accommodation to the I'm on a completely different teaching, but it relates, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm ahead on one. Okay, hold on. Let me go back again. Was it in the
listed four things.
Oh, here, it was in the Resist Not Evil. Yeah. And it was saying, it was talking about defining evil, and it said that it couldn't be a fixed principle, but that it said it that evils may, if it could be described, it would be described as something that is devoid of harmony and that lacks beauty and love, and something which does not fit into the accommodation of life. And Mershad went on to say, what fits into the accommodation of life other offers cannot be evil. Meaning that, I think that it's again relating to what Mershad Hidayat said, this idea of, you know, if I've heard it said, if there was one thing that we could point to, which really has to do with this path of Sufism that we're on, the path of universal Sufism, unity, it could be said in this way, and almost every tradition has this way of saying this. Jesus said, love thy neighbor as thyself. Accommodation, right? Mershad would tell us to always look at things from two points of view, from our own and from that of the other. The Native Americans would say, don't judge one unless you've walked, you know, miles in their moccasins, right? Or we say that also, we have that expression, we can't know unless we've walked in that person's shoes. So this is, again, giving an accommodation. And this is what Kidder was trying to teach Moses. We see things from one point of view, but there could be another point of view that isn't revealed to us. And, you know, likewise, there's that beautiful metaphor, there's that story about a man witnessing a cocoon and a butterfly in the cocoon trying to work its way through the cocoon. And he had so much sympathy for that struggle that he tried to help open the cocoon. And when the butterfly emerged, all it could do was sit on the cocoon because it hadn't gotten its wings strong enough to fly from the struggle. And in the same way with a chicken emerging from an egg or any bird, you know, they get their strength through that struggle. And we also want to sometimes rescue people. But we don't know that maybe that's the very thing. Maybe they need their heart broken. Maybe they need to feel defeated. Maybe they need to be, that needs to happen to them so that they can regain some strength or experience through that. I mean, people that have children, you know this too. Sometimes you just have to let them go through the school of hard knocks. You telling them isn't going to change it. They have to learn it themselves. Right? So sometimes the best thing you can do is to offer a sympathy and love for someone, and maybe even a silent support, just holding them in what they're going through. It's sometimes a heartbreak, but sometimes that's what is needed for their evolution. Yes. Franz.
Franz, would you like to unmute your line, or do you have a microphone? Because what you had typed in relates very much.
Just read it on his behalf. As evil is mostly the result of lack of love, then it is love that works as water on fire.
Yeah. Well, isn't there that saying, love conquers all?
Mm-hmm.
And it relates to resist not evil. The more we say, oh, you've done this and you've done that and you've done this and you've done that wrong, it just makes people firmer in their conviction, whatever that may be. Balance. Watchword, balance. Any other comments?
This is from Ananda, and I know she doesn't have a microphone. What puzzles me sometimes, though, is that loving people can also have jealousy and envy aimed at them. Hence, love gets targeted by fire, in a sense. Do you have any answers for me on this thought?
Ananda, do you mean the act of us loving another person? Or them loving us? It's not, of course, love.
Mm-mm.
It's possessiveness.
Mm-hmm. That someone who has a very loving nature gets targeted by evil, as we have spoken of tonight, today.
Oh yes, I think so too. I think that's very much the case. Often you see in the great beings, they were targeted. But I think that in a human way, when we love someone, really truly loving someone is to want their happiness more than your own happiness. To want to confine them in some way is possessiveness. That's not love.
But indeed, that is what she meant.
Yeah, that's a restriction. Again, another great example that my mom gave me when I was younger and I first started dating. I mean, she always emphasized that the worst thing one could feel, really one of the worst emotions, is jealousy. It was so limiting. And that goes to with someone that we may have a romantic involvement with, or with a peer or a colleague, or, you know, someone that's in our vicinity. I mean, that always comes out of some sort of comparison. And usually it comes out of a limited self-impression.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to check that, because we all do have that in some regard. And it's fed in a lot of ways, in media or whatever. But we want to be mindful of that and keep that in check.
Is that the way that you would say to keep it in check, is just to be mindful of it?
See, I think that we don't. I don't think we get anywhere by repressing things.
Right.
Nor do I get. I think we get anything by acting them out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think by observing them and trying to look at what the antidote is for that,
mm-hmm.
you know, then I think we can find again the balance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think observing it, being ruthlessly honest with oneself about it,
mm-hmm.
is very important. And sometimes, you know, the details aren't important. But one of the things that I can say is that when I've needed help with something from one of my teachers, I might say, there's a whole scenario that it'll be connected with it, and there may be players in my life, but I don't need to project that on them. I can just say, I'm having trouble with, you know, anger. Or I'm having trouble with feeling stubborn,
or I'm having feelings of envy that are arising. You know, what's the cure? What should I do? I have to own that. I think the first step is ownership. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, if we're projecting that outward constantly, we're really putting ourselves in a very helpless position. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And many comments.
Well, I'd like to hear that. Many comments.
Many
good.
Comments coming. I don't know if I should just... I think I'm just going to try and read through some of them.
Yes.
Nur Latifah had shared, as Rumi says in one of his poems, that what appears to be fire can become water. Transformation. So something that she had mentioned. And Alima from Holland was actually responding to something that was being said in the moment, and it said... be honest about it oneself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To thine own self be true.
Mm-hmm. And Ananda, I have also thought of this, like, so much light in someone enlightened inevitably gets them targeted by shade, as that light is needed so much in the darkness that those who target them experience unconsciously. Did I read that right, or should I read that
again?
So much light in someone enlightened inevitably gets them targeted by shade, as that light is needed so much in the darkness that those who target them experience unconsciously.
Yeah. Karuna Gita?
I'm kind of contemplating all of this because part of, and I'm going to speak from a personal experience, mm-hmm. because there was a point when I started to recognize emotions arise in me towards certain people, or that might, you know, jealousy might fit in that, or in that comparison piece too. Really does tie into that, but that when I became aware of that emotion within myself and just watching it, mm-hmm. that, you know, I became real aware of too of how that does project out.
Yeah.
And just the feeling of suddenly, oh my God, I don't want to do that to that person. Because just realizing itself made me feel so awful.
Right.
That if I felt that bad, imagine what that was making that person feel. And so in that, and I think of when you often refer to Buddhist, you know, your Buddhist practice and afflictive emotions, and how in that then... to suddenly shift it by just, you know, I remember at one point in time thinking, what do I do with this in myself? And I remembered you speaking of that practice of Tonglen. Mm-hmm. You know, and not that I had practiced that, but it was just, for me, it was a matter of thinking, I have to find all the things that I love or that I can appreciate about that person. Even if it's not love, even if I can't quite feel that, what is it that I do or can appreciate about that person? And I found that in doing that, it does shift mm-hmm. that. But ultimately, interestingly also, is to know that the person, how much we're hurting ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In doing that.
Yeah, well, it's...
And even in the resistance of it just does feed it. It just gets... It almost gets more and more aggravated.
Yes, it does. And remember, I've said it often, you know, that holding on to those feelings are like eating poison and waiting for the other person mm-hmm. to die. Mm-hmm. And again, it relates to this teaching of Murshids and the Gathas that it's that thought form can be very poisonous. Then it relates also to how Murshid says, you know, everything we send out comes back to us as an echo.
You know, and sometimes when we do or think those things or feel those things or say those things, we know as soon as it's come out, oh God, I wish I hadn't done that or said it. You know, if they say that, it's, once that bell's been rung, it can't be unrung. And that's why mindful awareness is very, very important. At a certain level in the Buddhist tradition, and I know that there are some of us, I know Mina, you and Paran and Zubin, I know you're also interested in Tibetan Buddhism, and so some of you, I know that Alima also in Holland, you've studied it, many of you probably have, but there's the pinnacle of that is seeing those afflictive emotions as raw energy. If you can capture that energy, then you can use that energy to transform oneself. But it's that limited view. It's a little bit like Moses and Kidder. We want to call it anger, but maybe it's a transformative energy, the fire element, right? We want to maybe call it lust and greed, but maybe it's also love. So we can use it to transform things and to find a balance.
There's that piece of burning.
Mm-hmm.
There's purification through
fire.
Fire.
That's right. That's right. So be aware, and you know, again, I love this quote. It's from the Dalai Lama. He's quoting Shanti Deva, which I think is one of the great, great, great masters on these subjects, but he says, think of those that hurt you and harm you as the great guru who has come to teach you strength and courage. Think of those that hurt you and harm you as the great guru who has come to teach you strength and courage. It's hard in the moment, but it's also true. Just really let that go in, and maybe we can put that quote on the website, because I think that's really a very important teaching to remember. Relating to what you were saying, Ananda, about the light and the shadow and the darkness, in the last week or so, in the Bowl of Sake, that teaching came up. Murshid was talking about the necessity for both light and shadow, that they, in a way, define each other. And
she said, yes, indeed, yeah. That was so inspiring.
Yes, and also that, you know, remember that there are these sayings, and perhaps there, I'm sorry that I'm giving them in English, but I think that they're probably sayings that transcend culture, but, you know, they'll say things like, it's always darkest before the dawn, right? Or in every cloud there's a silver lining. So these things, we can look at them and try to remember that. This too shall pass. Any other comments? I just have a... Well, let me ask you, would you like to hear... Murshid Hidayat has been involved. He shared with me that every day he puts aside a little time and he writes these quotes. And some of them have been put into the Reflections books. But there's a whole new set that's coming out. And he's asked me to work with him to edit these. And some of them... These are unpublished and untitled so far. First to be heard here. Would you like for me to read a few of them, because they relate to this lesson today? Would you like to hear some?
Definitely.
Yes. Definitely.
Yeah? So we'll call these the sayings of Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan, and I'll just read a few of them. When continually focusing on the negative things in others, one only destroys one's own peace of mind. Brigitte, that's what you were saying, isn't it? When continually focusing on the negative things in others, one only destroys one's own peace of mind. There's no happiness when forcing others to agree with one's own opinion. But one can force oneself to try to understand where differences separate. How about this one? Happiness cannot be found under the boots of possessiveness. Right? Yeah. Man.
I had to collect the
yeah. Happiness cannot be found under the boots of possessiveness. This is mine, you are mine, it is mine, whatever. You know, it's like, you know, squashing everything. Okay, a few more. When realizing how privileged one is with whatever little one has, one then discovers that happiness is only possible when offering happiness to others without expecting anything in return. Murshid said this just today. This golden key, remember he talked about the golden key? This golden key to happiness implies the absence of the self at a level where one's consciousness is raised to a higher level than just the I want to be happy concept. Really relates to this teaching. Yeah? Shall I read that one again?
Yeah, that one I...
When realizing how privileged one is with whatever little one has, one then discovers that happiness is only possible when offering happiness to others without expecting anything in return. This golden key to happiness implies the absence of the self at a level where one's consciousness is raised to a higher level than just the, in quotes, I want to be happy concept. I want to be happy no matter what's going on with this other person. Oh, don't tell me that sad story. I don't want to think about it. I'm happy. Do you know what I mean? Oh, don't bring me down. Right? There's even a song. Don't bring me down.
Well, that ties into the in the Resist Not Evil, there was also that about the expectations and the disappointment.
Yeah.
That follows. Yeah.
Yeah. Expecting so much from one another that we are constantly disappointed. Was there another comment?
Alima, would you like to ask your question?
We don't hear you. You can unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yes?
Oh, no, I lost my own text. What did one gives from happiness, and the other one does not accept it or receive it?
Oh, that's a really good question. And you know, I was reading something the other day because someone asked that. One of Hazard and I, Khan's Murids, asked that question. And I don't know if it was in the collective interviews. I'm not exactly sure where I was reading it. It's amongst my papers. And he said, it's not our responsibility what someone does with what we give. Our responsibility is to give. Is that clear?
Perfectly.
It really does us good to study Murshid, because I'm telling you, he went through it. He knew it, because he's... And people ask those questions, you know? And... you know, again, I love one of Murshid's quotes. He said, I'd rather be a tender-hearted sinner than one hardened by piety. That's another good one. Right?
Wow.
Because some people are so freaking self-righteous, you know, and so pious and so holy that, again, another expression of my grandmother, their shit doesn't smell. Excuse my grossness. But you know what I mean? Hello. Okay, I want a couple more quotes because I think these are so wonderful and pertinent. When wanting to be happy, there are quite a number of conditions to be met with. Leo, ooh.
He wants to get his comments.
He wants to get the Leo, the big coon hand, is like, whoa.
Okay.
When wanting to be happy, there are quite a number of conditions to be met with, such as appreciation for all that one has and having compassion for others who are less, overcoming unreasonable jealousy, which is comparable to a lock on the doors of the heart, being aware that happiness cannot be obtained at the cost of suffering of others, resisting self-assertion and false pretense, which only lead to failure. And Mercia today was saying that again, no false pretense. He'll often say, why are we trying to be spiritual? We are spiritual! He also likes to say, and I've seen it said by Hazaret and Icon in another way, falsehood is constantly trying to justify itself, whereas truth needs no justification. Leo agrees. Shall I read a couple more? I have three or four marked. Okay. Leo. He just wants to be heard.
Sure.
It's that wonderful, wonderful, that moan of the love dog, right? Yeah. The Rumi poem.
You, Leo has people laughing out loud all over the world right now.
Okay. Number 34. I feel like, who is that that does it? Johnny Carson used to, and now who's the guy that's kind of replaced him?
Jay Leno?
Jay Leno, the other one.
David Letterman?
Yeah, David Letterman. Number 10. Number 34. When envying others, it should be remembered that although one might have less than they have, nevertheless, they might have to pay a price sooner or later, which could be even higher than that which one would never expect to pay oneself. Okay, here it comes. Leo has a cold and he's clearing his throat. Oh, honey. You okay, baby? Good boy. Good boy. So here again, we don't know what sacrifices that person's needing to make. You know, I always think about that, the leaders of the different countries. I mean, my God, all that competition to become president of the United States, and then look at it. What a price that person has to pay. You know, or even I think about people like Murshid Hazrat and Anaya Khan, the sacrifices he made. I know that Murshid had died also. You know, the travel, the time, you know, the Dalai Lama traveling worldwide. My God, what kind of life does he have? Morning till night, meeting with people and giving teachings. You know, we admire these people and we think, why couldn't we be more like them? But do we really want to be them? I mean, think of the huge sacrifices they make to be in those positions. A few more. Among the many reasons for not being happy, the principal one is displeasure caused by one's own attitude. Mm-hmm. This obstruction could eventually be overcome with an understanding for one's own misjudgments instead of putting the blame on others. And that's what we were talking about earlier. That is a mental problem, Mom. But we all suffer from it from time to time. It's a collective mental problem. That's right. Don't they all appeal for that?
If you're an old person and you're authentic, you're not going to put... I don't believe you blame others for yourself. I mean, you know, I don't believe it.
But it happens.
Two more. The only method for overcoming displeasure is to focus one's thought upon a larger horizon than just oneself. And in wondering what one could do for others, rather than wasting time in expectations. Again, ah. Instead of, right? Relax, breathe out, instead of pulling. The Mother Mira of the Sri Aurobindo Ashram, she said, she would often say that she was quoted as saying that we don't realize the harm that we do when we're pulling towards ourselves. Mm-hmm. The last one. Among the many gifts of happiness, there is also such a thing as divine grace. But for reasons that one cannot explain, this favor, which is generously bestowed upon the chosen ones, also has its price to pay at a level of responsibilities, which are mostly placed unexpectedly on the path as a test entrusted by destiny. So
can we read that last one one more time?
Yes, it's beautiful. And you know, Murshid Hidayat is a... These sentences are just like if we just studied this one forever and ever.
Yeah.
You know, again, I think it's good to study vastly and to have a good scope and command, but there's also something for going deep. And really, any path that you would study is a key to everything. Any passage that you study becomes the key to everything. In Tibetan Buddhism, which is an extremely complex path of multiple levels and multiple deities and multiple teachings, in, you know, 108 kandra, 108 tandra, and then all the interpretations of the masters on those scriptures and so on and so forth. But you know what they always say? The great masters I've had the great opportunity to meet, study one thing and it will be the key to everything. And the beauty of Sufism, at least this path of an icon, is there's no restrictions. One can have one's never intended to take one away from a religion or to make a religion of it. It's to enhance and enlighten one's own path. So number 37. Among the many gifts of happiness, there is also such a thing as divine grace. But for reasons that one cannot explain, this favor, which is graciously bestowed upon the chosen ones, also has its price to pay at a level of responsibilities, which are mostly placed unexpectedly on the path as a test entrusted by destiny. So there's a lot today, and if we can remember some of these things and practice them throughout the month, it would be really beautiful. There is nothing, only God is. There is nothing, only God is. There is nothing, only God is. So, a reminder that tomorrow, I mean, I know some of us have an evening event we're going to tonight, and then tomorrow there's a universal worship service. Unfortunately, it won't be on available via Skype. It's at another place, and we don't know that there's a connection, but we'll try to have something available. This is when we give everyone an opportunity to be generous and practice generosity. I know all of you are, and you have been, and so there's a link. Cabrilla can send. There's a connection to PayPal, but there's also you can use a credit card, or you can send money. But the reason why we ask for that is because you know that we do. We have many charitable acts that we're supporting here with the center work, and not only that, but there is an obligation that we have, or I will say that I have, to support the parent organization as they really support me. And so collectively we can do that together. Otherwise that burden falls on my shoulders, plus the website, all of those things, as you know, anyone that has them, cost something. So if we want to keep making things available, again, that falls on my shoulders if people aren't there and supporting and helping. So help me keep helping the message and be as generous as you possibly can. If you can't give money, give your prayers that others can be generous, will be. Okay? So that's that. And shall we rise for the closing prayer? So we'll say the cartoon together. O thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all that have stayed up late.